This is a HeadGum Podcast.
What's up, shitheads? Welcome back to another episode of High and Mighty. It's me, your boy, the number one fuckboy. The number one fuckboy. 6'2", 288 pounds. The number one fuckboy, Johnny G. Joining me as always in the High and Mighty studios, my nearly silent co-host, Arthur Gabrus. Arthur, give him a shout out. Arthur is my dog and he is not here. Also joining me in the High and Mighty studios, been a fan of his for a long time since I moved to LA, first saw him and said, what the fuck is this? I love this. He is on my podcast, hilarious stand-up comedian, got a podcast himself and a new special called For the Masses. Ladies and gentlemen, it's fucking Eddie Pepitone.
Oh my God, that was the best intro I have ever saw. And I love that you have a French bulldog named Arthur. I have two little guys. I have Charlotte and Basil. And I love Frenchies, man. Whenever I see them, you know, I go to this park to walk my dogs. Not to brag, I have that kind of lifestyle. But whenever I see a Frenchie, I'm like, oh, man, they're so cute. And I always mix them up with Boston Terriers, but don't tell Arthur.
Arthur is a Boston Terrier, but I still won't tell him.
Oh, you get it? He's a Boston Terrier.
So you set up that you always confuse the two and then demonstrated it right there. That was perfect. That was like one by one.
Oh, man, yeah.
But, yeah, they look exactly the same. Boston's, we say, are like, yeah, they're like a little leaner. Their legs are like a little bit longer. It's like the real main. But there's something about that face that just makes me love dogs like
oh,
that.
Oh, dude, yeah. Dogs are the best, man. Where is Arthur?
Arthur, my wife now, since she's working from home and he's got attachment, like, he could give a fuck about me once she's around.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And he doesn't like, he likes to be able to, if I shut the door in here because I'm screaming while my wife does like an actual job in the other room, he's like, I'm not, he's like, he has to constantly leave. So he just sits right by her and stares at her. I think she has a little faster human food to his mouth pipeline than I do. I'm a little bit more stern.
Right. Also, it's very funny that we never refer to our profession as anything serious. Like, she has an actual job while I'm in here jerking off on the podcast, right?
Yeah.
It's so funny.
It's been instilled. I don't know why I'm like, it's,
well, you know what? Like,
yeah. Why is this? Why do we think what we do?
Because fucking comedians don't get paid for 90% of what they do. Right. It's unbelievable. It's unbelievable.
And even when you do, when you're like, when you have to like articulate, like, well, the podcast is good because it keeps the brand down. It keeps people. And then the second you say anything like that, you're like, I fucking hate myself. I should be fucking knocking tin and less stressed about my fucking life.
Yeah, really. Really. It's so true.
The working from home at the same time, like when my wife used to go to an office to work, I at least had an air of mystery as to what my days were of like, you know, like I'm like, oh, I'm running around. Oh, I had this big call. Like I used to be able to stretch a conference call with my fucking manager into like, we had a huge important creative meeting was just like, hey, they don't like you at this show.
And now she sees it. Now she sees you. And you're faking calls. You're faking calls.
I'm banking podcasts.
Like, oh, no. Exactly. No. Tell Apatow I am absolutely interested. I'm interested.
I am like, oh, let me bank podcast episodes this week because I'm feeling like I don't look like I'm working. So it's like, I actually have a 2 o'clock and a 4 o'clock today. So if you can, I'm doing.
Oh, that's funny.
Yeah. I'm going to go scream at Eddie Pepitone for an hour. Like, but that's like my job. You get that? It's fucking.
Yeah. Well, it is funny, you know, because comedy is so much fun.
Yes.
That I think, I mean, it really is, but, you know, it becomes a grind as well. I do stand-up. Do you do a lot of stand-up?
Not a lot of stand-up, but I've been trying to do more. I don't have a good work ethic, but I enjoy it a lot.
I don't have a good work ethic is going to be on my tombstone.
It's on. That is about me on my dad's tombstone. My son Jonathan does not have a good workout.
Oh, my father! My father gave up on me a long time ago. He used to care, and now he's like, when I tell him about gigs, he goes, did you get paid?
My mom asks, like, do they reimburse you for cabs? Like, my mom is like, she's so in the nitty gritty of like what she cares. I'm like, yeah, there's, I'm going up to Portland to a comedy festival. She's like, do they pay for your food or do you have to buy your own food? And I'm like, I don't want to answer the question because the answer is like, no, I get $800 all in. Like,
right,
I have
to, yeah, right,
I'm sleeping
right,
on a couch
right.
I'm 36.
Oh my God.
What you're saying, Eddie, about comedy being fun is also the part where you feel bad, like where you're like, mm-hmm, yes, I'm laughing, but it is stressful. It is hard for me to get there, but it also, like, you find a harder time complaining about it to people who have like normal jobs, where you're like,
oh yeah,
I get
oh,
it
yeah,
that I am just like, we always, like, every comedian I know is like, yeah, I'm just up here slinging dick jokes, and you know, I'm not a doctor or anything like that. And then
right
at the same time, you're like, but this is destroying me, and I'm pretending like it's like. This is like ruining my personality, destroying my sense of self, and then I'm going, but hey, it's goofy bullshit. I love it.
Yeah. Well, we're so crazy that we need validation so badly that we will put up with all of the hardship in comedy, which is, fucking trying, making a living at it,
Oh yeah.
It's difficult.
And also, I found that I'm like, I immediately level up. Like, I remember as long as I don't have to be a bartender or a temp, and I'm just doing comedy, I'll be living the dream. And then when I got to that, and then it was like, as long as I don't have to be coaching and teaching improv at UCB, and I could just do comedy, that's great. Now I'm at the level where I'm just doing comedy, and I'm like, fuck, man, I'm like, it's so, I'm like trying. Yeah. And I'm so far around the other side. I'm like, I would kill for a good bartending shift once a week. Just to keep me alive. That's just to keep me afloat and keep me sane.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I think about that sometimes, like, because I always based my life on not having to work hard. That's how I based my life.
Same.
That whole thing about work ethic, for me, that was another generation. And somebody gave me the book, The Road Less Traveled. Did you ever hear that book?
No, I haven't.
Scott Peck. Well, The Road Less Traveled, it's all about, responsibility. Like, responsibility is what makes a man. Like, responsibility is what makes an adult. And it's about work ethic and, don't go the easier route. Take the hard route, because that's where the real reward is. And I immediately burned that book because it didn't fit into my lifestyle. But I have been thinking about going, what it would be like to go. But I'm 61, by the way. What it would be like,
Jesus,
to go.
I don't know what reaction you were looking for, but that's the best I could give you.
That's the reaction I have to it. Like, no.
Eddie, but
what happened to you?
Hearing that shit makes me so happy because that puts you at about 20 years older than me, and that makes me like, I would fucking be so stoked to be at doing what you're doing what I'm doing for the next 20 years. And that's success in a weird way. And
Like, I just had this special come out, and it's getting great reviews, an hour of stand-up. And I don't know about you, but when you do something that gets a lot of praise, I have trouble taking it in. I have trouble thinking, oh, yeah, I'm really good. Like, I don't know what it is. I don't know what it is, but I still... feel like I always see the flaws in it. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I think if you train your brain to find the bullshit in life at every level, you easily can turn that lens onto yourself too, where you're like, because you would immediately get the hairs on your neck would stand up if you heard someone have a special, get some good reviews, and they're like, I think I'm actually good at, you'd be like, fuck you, pal. And then the second you start doing it, you're like, hey, fuck you, self. And for me, it constantly requires remembering like 8 years ago or some version of a younger comic or a younger person who's like, yeah, I would love to be where you're at, like making money doing podcasts and shit. And I'm like, oh, fuck.
Right.
Yeah, I am at a place. I hit a goal that I've wanted to hit for a while. And now I'm already just upset that I'm not at the next thing and I'm not enjoying. I'm like, I want to stop living in an apartment. Yeah. I'm 40. I don't want to live in an apartment. And I'm like, well, I chose this fucking path.
I know. And what is it? Well, you ever like get a job on TV and you're on the set and you think you were going to be so happy on the set, like you, it was going to be like so great, and you're on the set and you're in your little green room that they give you and you're like, ah, I don't know, I don't feel good. Like, it's like you still are like never fucking satisfied, you know?
The analogy I use for that is like, if you have sex like once a quarter, it doesn't feel as good as like, you're not confident in fucking that time. Like the once a quarter that I'm invited to a TV set to do something, I'm so out of my own element. It's like, if you let me do this once every 90 days, it's too nerve wracking. Like I build it up too much in my head to make $800 on Brooklyn Nine-Nine or whatever. Fuck dude. They want me to stand over here and I'm standing at the wrong place. I fucked it up. And then it's like, all you need is like 3 weeks in a row of that. And by the end, you're like, I'm fucking Hollywood. You're like out of your own parking. You're like so comfortable. But when you do it so infrequently, you put too much pressure on it. Like sex, I feel like, where you're like, if I'm having, like when I was 17, it would be like, or 19, and sex would be like once every 6 months. When it would happen, you'd be like, I'm putting too much pressure on this one event. And you're like, it's over and I sucked at it and everyone's upset. I'm never going to get cast in this again.
I remember. Doing a guest spot on the Goldbergs and the call time was some ridiculous, horribly early call time. And I live in the Valley and it was in Culver City. And I like got, you know, 3 hours sleep or whatever, because I'm used to going to bed at 2 and I had to get up at 5. And I get up at 5 and I drive to Culver City in brutal traffic. I'm like driving to Culver City from the Valley going, what the fuck are these people up for? Don't tell me they do this every day, you know? You know, and then I get there and I was so tired. And you know how you usually sit around waiting for hours before they finally film you? Well, this was unbelievable. I get there, I put on my wardrobe and they wanted me immediately. And I kept fucking up the lines. And it was so funny because I was fucking up Rick Moranis's name because they were like, no, it's not Moranis. It's
Moranis.
What was I saying? Moranis.
And you were saying, anus.
Yes. And I couldn't, you know how you get it in your head, a certain line.
And it's fucked.
And you're like, it was fucked. And you know, they're doing like a bunch of takes with me. And I'm like, my whole time, my head is going, you'll never be on this show again.
I know.
Never.
That's that imposter syndrome shit at peak. And then also, there's nothing in your life that prepares you for the skill. Nothing in our careers prepare you for the skill set of getting invited, like being on. I keep calling it getting invited, but like booking a role. Like it feels like getting invited to a party for the first time. You're like, do not fuck this up. Do not piss on the toilet seat. Do not like eat too much. Like just be. And then it happens so infrequently and you're so unprepared for it because like you spend your training is like, I stay out till 2 a.m. driving around the city screaming bits into a microphone. And then now the one time I book something, it's like, be here at 5 a.m. I hope you know what you look like dressed in clothes. You're like, I wear a fucking tank top and shorts every day.
Same here.
They're like, you said you were a 40 waist. This doesn't fit. I'm like, I'm sorry. Like, I was a 40 waist a year and a half ago when I shot something. I haven't worn fucking buttons my pants in a decade. Like, help me out here.
I know. Like, my agent has my measurements, and they're probably measurements from like 7 years ago, and I never changed them. And I always, whenever they want my measurements, I say, hey, Spencer, can you send them my measurements? And he does. And I have the same thing when I get to wardrobe. They're like, you said you were a 40 waist? And I'm embarrassed about my weight as it is.
I know.
And it's just like,
trying on clothes. I bitch about this all the time. It's the most fucking champagne first world problem. But I hate trying on clothes because I have body issues that I've had since I was fucking 7.
Me too.
And now Mm-hmm. When you have to professionally try on clothes in front of someone and they're like, and you're sweating and they're like, switch the khakis. And you're like, you know, for me, this is like a 15 minute thing, just taking off these pants and putting on another pair. But I don't want to waste your time. So I'm like rushing and I'm out of breath and I'm like, is my butt sweat visible on my underwear as I change? Like all the shit that goes through your head. It's like, I don't want to, I hate trying on clothes. I find a shirt that fits and I order 12 of them in double XL and then I'm good for a fucking year. And so when that's part of it, and then that's something guys like us aren't like, and I'm not to lump you in with me not knowing you that well, but like, we're not caring. I'm not like picking out an outfit to do anything. So like when it's, you have to like, they're like, right. Well, which khakis do you want to wear? I'm like, just tell me. I don't even know what which looks good on me. And I have to just trust you. And then you walk.
I don't.
And then you trust the professional and then a professional hair person and to do your hair. And then you walk out and you go, why did I trust these people? I look like shit right now. Why didn't I speak up and say that's not how I wear my hair? Because I'm afraid to be a diva, or I don't actually know how to wear my hair because I'm fucking 40 and wear a backwards hat still.
I love when they do my, you know, hair, makeup. I love all that. Like we were talking about the pursuit of fame, right? Yeah. That's the topic. And it's like, it's so funny. Like, yeah, we don't get invited on to the invited. It's so funny. But we don't get jobs that often because it's so crazily competitive, and the directors and casting people usually have someone in mind immediately. And you know, my agent is always telling me, well, Eddie, you know, TV now, they're doing straight offers to big people. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like a part that I'm going for. Oh, that wound up John Lithgow.
Yeah.
You know, or something.
Yeah, it's like me and Patton Oswalt. It's like, well, yeah, I would put Patton in a show over myself. Like, yeah, I would. But every once in a while, you do get to be the director or the cat. Obviously, you're not getting like, the director's not going like, I want Eddie for the lead in this Marvel movie. But our connections are on like, our connections are on a different tier, kind of, where it's like, hey, the guy who the guy who's going to hand so-and-so a hot dog on the fucking superstore, that could be Gabrus. And it's like, that I'm all here for that. I love when I'm so mad when it's straight offer to anyone, but the rare occasion when it's like, hey, straight offer, do you want to be in the cold open of this Comedy Central show? It pays $400. You're like, straight offer, I've made it.
Yeah. Sometimes my agent goes to me, hey, if you don't want to audition for this thing, we'll just tell them straight offer. And I think I'm really hot shit. I'm like, yeah, tell them straight offer.
And they're like, great. The offer is no. And you're like, okay, well, that plan backfired.
Yeah. Hey, whatever happened with the straight offer thing? Oh, we never. That went to George Clooney. Really? It was me or Clooney?
It was just down to the two of us. Yeah. The person, they weren't really sure what the character was going to be. When they locked it in, they went with a Clooney rather than a Pepitone. Classic Hollywood.
Yeah.
Classic Hollywood move.
Yeah. Or they went in a different direction. No, Eddie. Yeah, they went, instead of you, they went with, you know, a blonde woman. Yeah, they just went. It's totally, they totally changed the part. And you're like, what the fuck?
That one almost makes you feel a little better, though, when they're like, oh, they were going to go with you, but they went with like a thin man, like a thin person of color. You're like, yeah, well, then that's a completely different vibe. I am not. But like when it's like they went with this other fat bearded guy that you think you're funnier than, but he's not that. And it's like that's like this is the hardest part about this element of the entertainment business is like my wife will always say, that guy got the job. You're so much funnier than him. And I go,
I know.
If only that mattered. It doesn't matter on TV. Like, it really doesn't.
Right. What is it? Is it a look or is it how well you audition? I'm not sure.
I'm sure it's a combination of both. And I feel like sometimes I have the look. I definitely am not good at auditioning. I definitely put too much pressure on myself, on the situation. And I also, that's where my desire to succeed and my work ethic really hit. Come to head, because I'll be like, I really want this and I'll do nothing to prepare for it. I'll be like,
same here.
I'm like, all I want is a fucking audition. I never get auditions. I'll get an audition. I'll be like, sick. And then I won't do any prep on it. And I'll be like, I can't believe I didn't
same
get
here.
That. And I'm like, I didn't do any effort.
Yeah. Yeah. Me and you ought to open a theater company and it never has an opening night. Like,
we're just trying to figure out flyers for like 6 months while we just run out of the grant money or whatever.
Right. It just says on our marquee, coming soon, Death of a Salesman, but we never get it together.
That would 100% be me. It's like the blank final draft document where it's like, it's time I write my movie in quarantine. It's like, well, 100 days have passed and I have an idea for a name, maybe.
Exactly. I was definitely going to write a couple of screenplays during quarantine. That has not happened.
I said to myself, I was like, I always thought it was my lack of free time that was preventing me from getting. I'm like, I'm always hustling to go to a meeting or an audition or a show or a podcast episode, blah, blah, blah. That's why I have no time to write. Now I have nothing but free time. And I'm like, okay, well, no, it's me. I'm the problem. I've solved it. I'm the only variable that's blowing this thing up here.
Also, another thing I want to say about getting acting gigs, you know, television acting gigs, is it's hilarious. I am such a critic of how bad TV comedies are. And then if they hire me, I'm like, oh, fuck. You know what I mean? Like, I go from, oh, this show sucks. And then I go on to Goldberg's and I can't even do Rick Moranis' line. You know what I mean? It's like hilarious that I'm so critical of the shows for being like, you know, I'm on Twitter going, these toothless fucking shows, you know.
Right. And then you're like, this show, like, this is 100% exactly where I'm at. I'm like, I don't even watch these network comedies. Like, hey, would you like to audition for this network comedy? I'm like, yeah, it sucks, but of course. Then I go there and they're like, that was actually pretty good. Thanks for coming in. And then you leave and you're like, oh my God, please, please let me be on A to Z. Please, oh fuck, let me get. And then you don't get it. And you're like, I knew that show fucking. And then when you do get, you're like, oh shit, I'll be working with this insert random sitcom actor. This could be good for me. You know, I could make connections. And then you go and then you bomb it. And then you're like, maybe it is actually hard. And it is. And then like you just do this circle where you're constantly justifying. And I never ever land on, well, that was your fault in any way. It's like, I'm just constantly, I'm like 11 steps where I'm like, they set me up for failure. It's like, who's they?
I had the experience. This was amazing. I got cast on the most mainstream sitcom, Will and Grace, like recently. It was actually a really funny part. I played a plumber who comes to her place. Deborah Messing? Yeah. And first I want to say that I have such an attitude about these sitcoms sucking, you know, and I get there and they're all so fucking nice to me. Eric McCormick, Sean Hayes, Deborah Messing. I was like, I felt like, oh shit, these people are so nice. What am I doing being such an asshole, you know, like saying this sitcom sucks or whatever. But that was really cool because James Burrows, the famous director, directed me on that.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah. He's like a legend in Hollywood. And he was so cool, but I was uptight, but he just knew that that part was perfect for me. And, he, you know, his direction would be like, yeah, just, you know, before you say toilet, just lean against the wall a little. You know, like he was so cool, you know, and I loved it.
An experience like that makes you leave and you go like, if I'm protected, if like the writer, producer, or director like understands what I can do and helps me out, I can be good in this. And that like,
yes.
And then you're like,
yes.
Then you can get bitter about not getting the chances. And you're like, and then that could easily put the blame on other people. But there is that element of like, every once in a while, someone's like, Gabrus, I know, do your thing on this. Do this thing that I know you like. And then all of a sudden you feel confident and successful in the moment. But I rarely leave like a day player moment and being like, I was value. You can't help but feel like, even though you know they're going to do 9 takes. And then when you do it, you're like, I can't believe they made me do 9 takes. I fucking must have sucked on, you know, and it's like, you can't, your brain just doesn't allow you to understand like, this is how the system works. Like, and then you're like, of course this part's going to get edited down. This is a 21 minute episode of TV. I'm the guy who's just, it's going to get, and then when it gets edited down, you're like, they edited it down because I sucked. And it's like, no. You know that TV works a certain way. But then you get that rare occasion where you're like, oh, like I did Workaholics and I happen to know the guys. And that was such an enjoyable, and yeah. it was stupid, and it was wild, and it was like right in my
right.
sense of humor. I got it, and I felt so protected. Yeah. I had so much fun, and I left, and I'm like,
yeah.
that's what I need. And then like 18 months right. go by before you work again or whatever.
Yeah.
And you're like, completely forget all that, hate yourself again. You've done like three cycles. Yeah. yeah.
Right, right. And that's one of the hardest things about pursuing, you know, quote unquote fame or a career in Hollywood, is that the ups and downs are super intense. You know, it's like you get really up because, like you said, you know, you get a job where you get, you know, you're like acting with all these famous people, and you act with Jim Burrows, and he's cool, and they tape Will and Grace before a live audience, and then that's really cool,
especially for performers. Like, who aren't,
yeah.
like, for, like
yeah.
I wouldn't call myself an actor first, but I am a live performer. So that energy feels real.
Right.
Like, the couple of times I've got to do multicam, you feel like, oh, I'm more comfortable here. This is like coming out on stage. Like, this, you get that energy feeling. And that must be a fucking, that's a dream.
Right. And then, like you said, you go home and you feel good for like maybe a day and a half.
36 hours tops.
36 hours. And then you're like, okay, what's next? I'm hot. And then, you know, nothing comes in again for a while. And you're like, God fucking damn it.
If you had the ability to zoom out and look at your own timeline, you would see that like, the pattern is improving constantly of like, oh, it is more frequent.
Yeah.
It is this, but it's hard not to, you only feel the lulls when you're in them. You know what I mean? Like you don't remember that. Like, oh, like I swear to God. And 2020 is obviously a very different instance, but every year around like August or whatever, I'm always like, damn, no phone calls, no nothing, man. I must suck. And I'm like, no, remember, this has happened every year for 10 years that there's
yes,
just...
Yes, you never remember.
Yeah, and you never like, oh, this year I'm hot. I won't have a two-month lull like everyone has every year. And
yes.
then you have it and you're like, oh, I'm a bummer. And then you get something, you're like, oh, right, this is every fucking year. Our brains are so short on positive.
Yeah.
My short-term memory is so awful on positive things.
Ooh, right.
And I can remember... a time I mispronounced something in an audition from 10 years ago that I was not even considered for. And I'm still like, that is the path. That's my sliding doors where I went the wrong fucking way or whatever.
You know what's funny? You know what's funny is that my agent tells me actors who think they had a great audition usually never get the job. And actors who think they've had terrible auditions get the jobs more. And I don't know what the hell that's about, you know?
Yeah, I never feel comfortable in an audition. Like the ones that have gone...
Man, I mean,
the ones that have gone best for me have been some confluence of me not caring yet me feeling comfortable, like, which is like, oh, I don't know if I want this,
right.
but at least it's a blue collar guy or a New York accent or something I feel, or they're like, just riff, you know, like anything that I think I'm okay, I'm good at. Like, I need it to be so set up for success. I'm like a special case child. It's like, no, he needs like a special little
yeah.
carrots next to him. Open up his little apple juice for him. Like, I need like a full setup for me to feel at all like I have a chance in this.
For over 80 years, Fram has been a leader in automated filtration because that's the only thing they do. Filters. Do you want to protect your well-oiled machine? We're talking about a car. Or breathe easier when driving? Obviously, car. Fram has the right filter for every kind of driver. Fram oil filters are American-made, tough, and feature sure grip technology. No slip grip for easy install and remove, even with an oily hand or glove. Fram cabin air filters filter out contaminants like exhaust fumes, allergens, and pollution. And with the power of Arm & Hammer baking soda, you can breathe easy with an odorless interior. No matter how you drive, Fram has the right filter for you. Head over to Fram.com. That's Fram.com. That's Fram.com. Fram.com. And find your perfect filter today.
Eddie, real quick, we're talking about
yeah.
the pursuit.
Yeah.
We're talking about the pursuit of fame. But we can get
right.
Fame is not what I'm after and not what you're after, I'm assuming, but there is an element where fame will fame itself is not what we're after, and money itself is not what we're after. I feel like what we're after, like what everyone in this business is after, is like respect, and a level of respect that you just get to keep amongst, you know, there feels to be something in comedy and in Hollywood in general where there's some imaginary hump that once you're, and we've seen it with all our peers, there's some imaginary hump that once you're over it, you're like, oh, that guy, Brett Gelman, is in. He's in everything now. He's great. He's a dramatic actor, a serious comedy. He's in all this shit. Oh, he's in Fleabag and Stranger Things. Jesus Christ. Like, Brett Gelman's a special case. Interesting guy. But, like, all those other, you see those, and so you keep thinking that's going to happen for me. So any buildup of.
Yes.
But I don't. Money I like because then I feel less stressed and I could feel like I can go longer without having to take some bullshit or go back to some job. But fame, you're like, who cares about fame? But so many people do, especially in like, and not even LA.
Yeah.
Now we can just get into being old men for a second. But with social media and shit, it feels like everybody's chasing fame. And then we are moving to Hollywood to become actors, comics, writers, whatever. And I don't care about the fame part. But if the fame part helps me get more roles and get me more money, then I want the fame part. Like, I don't understand. Like, it's a complicated kind of relationship you have with like these, because fame, you don't want to be like, I gotta like rush from Target to my car because people are taking photos of me. Like, but I do want what else comes with that, where you get asked to be in every, like, you know, where you're getting tons of offer only emails. Like, that's what we all want, is like the path of least resistance towards good money, TV money, residuals, touring, and for touring comics, like, you get a few TV credits that could up your ticket sales and shit like that. So
big time. Big time.
So that's like the only the fame part comes into play, is where you're like, I really just want to make more, like, the way I always articulate it is like, I just want to make people laugh. Ideally, the more people I'm making laugh, the better, because it feels like that's my path to more success and getting more people to think I'm funny. And it's all ego and that shit. Like, I'm not like, I just want to change the world one smile at a time. I just want a shit ton of people to say, this dude's pretty fucking funny. Like, and if it has to be if I have to fight tooth and nail to play a fireman on Brooklyn Nine-Nine and have one line in a fucking movie, I'll do whatever it takes. As long as people go, oh, that guy, yeah, he's pretty funny. Like, that's all I really want in the end. Specifically.
Yeah.
Because we don't want fame. Fame is not like the end all be all, but that is for a lot of people.
Well, we want the trappings, I guess.
Yes,
right.
Yeah. You want like the money and the lifestyle that comes, like getting invited to the things, getting the meetings, getting to sit with Apatow and be like, I'm from Long Island. I could be the king of that island if you want. My dad is dead.
Oh, by the way, I know Judd, because Judd, I work out of the Comedy Store, and Judd does stand up there, you know. And, you know, this, I'm from Staten Island. Okay. Now, you know, the movie that just came out.
Yes.
I was not in it.
that might come up at the next, whenever the store is open again, that might have to come up for Judd.
yeah. Like 2023 at the rate we're going.
Yeah. By 2023, the comics will be comedy clubs will be back open, and I think there'll be maybe some less headliners due to legal ramifications.
Oh yes, yes, yes.
There might be some spots open.
yeah, man, it's wild. So I think it is, like, it's so easy in this business to feel fucking invisible.
Yes,
right.
Yes.
And you feel invisible, but you have to have a big ego to get into this business, I think, with the possible exception of writers who seem to be more, I don't know, they don't crave the spotlight, you know?
Yeah.
But actors, comedians especially, are neurotic messes, and they need validation, but it's so, like, this business is brutal. Yeah. It really is brutal.
Well, there's like an element of like, even if it's not a big ego, you need a sort of indestructible ego. You need to be able to handle rejection, even if you are, no matter what position you choose in this environment in entertainment. It's like writer, act, you need to be able to handle no, and that's hard for a lot of people. And it's hard for a lot of people, and we still do it. And it's too hard for some people that's like, my wife will straight up say, like, I can't even imagine waiting to hear back about something that's big. Like, she can't do it. Like,
yeah,
she has a normal like career in marketing. So she's like, maybe every 3 to 5 years has a job interview. And she's like, it's been a week, I haven't heard back. I'm like, babe, this is 6 times a week this happens to me, where I'm like, maybe you have a new job, maybe you don't. I'm like,
yeah.
And she's like, I don't know how you do it. I can't imagine. And then you realize, it's like, oh, that is probably emotionally taxing to be constantly wondering, A, not even what your next day looks like, but B, like, what your next fucking rent nut looks like or whatever. You're like, let me just hit 2 things in the fall, and then I can maybe, I'll make it to the end of the year. It's like, so.
I know. It is amazing. It is amazing how different times I've gotten decent acting gigs on network shows when I really needed it. You know, like, that is amazing. I'm like, oh, shit. You know, and they're paying $5,000 for the week.
Yes, yes.
You know, like, they hire me for the week instead of just the day.
Oh,
or
yeah.
Whatever.
As someone who's so used to just the rare occasion that I do get to do, it's a huge success to get that SAG day rate to go, like, hand a videotape back to somebody in a flashback or some shit. But, like, the once or twice that I've gotten, like, a multi-day, like, nothing makes you. You could eat, like, if you work 2 days on a network sitcom, like I did 3 days on Brooklyn Nine-Nine last season, and by the end of it, I could see myself becoming a full-time, like, you can adapt to that sitcom star life so quick, where you're like, hey, are they out of espresso? Like, you're on day two, you're like, hey, can we get, like, you're already, like, you were like, I'm dying to be there, I'll do it, and then you get there, and you're like, hey, the air conditioning in my trailer is fucked up, I want it free, like, you know, you're instantly, like, caught up in it. I'm like, oh, I could. And all I think about when I do a day or 3 days on these are, like, imagine just getting to do 20 weeks of this. Not just the pay, but 20 weeks of free food, 20 weeks of hanging with some of the other funny people and interesting people that you don't get to see a lot in life. You know, you're like, oh, shit, this is the dream come true. And then your gig is up and you're like, right, well, I got a taste, and who knows when I'm going back.
Well, I think that's what makes it really difficult, actually, when you get a taste of how great it is. Like, just walking onto a studio lot is amazing. You're like, oh, wow. It's almost like a college campus, a studio lot. You know how college campuses, well, before mass shootings, how they feel very safe. Like, they feel safe. They feel like, oh, this is where I belong. You know, it's very civilized.
A light layer of artificiality, but that lends it to make it feel more comfortable, where it's like that, like a golf course feeling, where you're like, this seems fake, but I feel at home. Like, so get in the studio, and then, like, walking past, like a random production office, and it says, like, you know, outside it says, like, A. Sandberg, or, like, you know, like, and you're like, oh shit, that's Andy Samberg's car. Like, there's, like, that weird level of fame. Right. Like, NCIS, they shoot here. It's like M. Harmon, and you're like, Mark Harmon keeps his car here. Like, it's like these weird fucking, and you're like, my car is in this parking lot now. My Volkswagen wagon is here next to three Teslas.
I have a spot. I have a spot the whole week. Yeah. And then you start getting an attitude, like, if like someone comes up to you and they say, are you an extra on this? And you're just like, you just shake your head. Like,
come on.
You don't know. You don't know. No, I'm not an extra on this. Okay, I'm making $5,000 for this week. That's my trailer over there, and it's a full size one.
Yeah.
You understand?
That's me. I'm janitor. Like, that's my trailer over there. Just a piece of blue tape that says janitor. And you're like, damn right, brother.
And what's amazing is how hard it is to get the janitor role.
No shit. The amount of talent, like, to book the one-day janitor role on Modern Family, if you and I...
I could never get on Modern Family.
Same. And those shows are the ones that drive me crazy, the ones that have had 220 episodes.
It's actually a good show.
And if you're like...
It's actually a good show. And that's when you really feel like shit, because I think it ran 10 years and it was actually one of the very few shows that I actually watched and really liked. And our buddies are on it. Andy Daly, Rob Riggle, U-Bowl was on it. Like almost everybody I know. Let me tell you this.
Oh, go.
I just want to say this about, you know, having to wait around. I auditioned for Modern Family, and they have a pin in you, Eddie. Oh. You ever get told that? Like, it's between you and it looks like two other guys.
Yeah.
And
you have a pin, meaning?
Then I'm like, okay.
They're telling you, cancel your plans. There's a pin in you. But we don't give a fuck what you do. Like, you're like, well, I'm supposed to fly home to visit my ailing aunt. It's like, cancel it. This is Modern Family. And then it's like, and you don't get it, bud. You're like, oh, come on. Wait, just to jump back to that janitor thing. Say, for the listeners to understand this, a Modern Family is booking a janitor for one scene. They have like one punchline. In the room to go to audition for it is, say, like, you go to audition for it. I'm like, I got a janitor type. Eddie's a janitor type. Eddie and I show up. There are 40 people there that amongst those 40 have hundreds of years of comedy experience. Like, some of the funniest stand-ups, funny-ass actors, funny-ass improvisers. It's like all your favorite podcasters. We're all in the same room, and it's like, is this going to Gemberling, Steve Agee, Pepitone, Gabe? It's like, there's just, and it's like, all this for one little fucking segment. The amount of juice and energy that goes into, in the room is fucking Danny Zucker and the director of that episode and like the casting director and the writer and the producer. And it's like, there is so much money and all this shit surrounding, like, to pick which one of us gets $700 to say, hey, you dropped your mop, Phil, or whatever, you know, like, and the amount of energy the amount of weight we all put on that, and that and they just go like, I don't know, Gabrus is too tall. Like, we need someone a little shorter. It's like, I was thinking that they would have gray hair. Great. And then it's just like, put an X through 40 faces. And you're like, that's the business. And we choose to be part of it. So we kind of have to.
Yeah. And when I arrive, I'm always like, I'll read a script and I'll go, oh my God, this is totally mine. This is totally my role. There's no way I don't get this. And then I get there, and like you said, you go into a room and there's 40 meats. There's 40 guys who look like me. And I'm like, motherfucker, why did I again do that thing where I'm like, oh, there's no way I'm not going to get this, you know?
I'm always like, oh, this lines up perfectly. They kind of want like a sloppy looking guy. he should have a New York accent. I'm like, yes, check. I show up and it's just like 20 and 19 of them are handsomer than me. Like, and I'm like, oh, well, fuck. Like, well, fuck you. Oh, now there's a 28-year-old version of myself out here auditioning. Why would you pick me? God damn it.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, at my age, I walk into rooms, right? At my age, I walk into rooms now, and the people that I'm up against, I look at them and I go, am I that fucking ugly? Am I that old? Like, I always am like, no. I am grouped in with these losers.
I have the same thing about like whenever the audition is for like a heavy set or overweight guy, which I am medically overweight.
I hate
but
that.
Hollywood, like, I'm not like punchline overweight. I'm not like walk into the scene and you're like, oh, the boat's gonna flip. You know what I mean? Like so like you get invited to these auditions where for the sake of the scene, the guy needs to be overweight and you roll up and you're like, oh, I hate myself for being fat, and I'm not fat enough to book this role. Like, I'm giving myself relentless shit about being overweight. I show up here to audition for an overweight thing, and I'm like, I'm in better shape than everyone. I'm not going to get it because I'm not fat enough, something I've been whipping myself on the back for like 25 years. And I'm like,
Yeah. So it really is a business. Like you were talking about before, where you have to have like really, really thick skin, and like eventually you just get over. Well, not you don't get over it, but it's like, okay, I didn't get that one. Like you get this kind of like, you know, attitude that okay, well, you know, I'm not going to kill myself. Whereas when I was younger, I'd be so disappointed. Like I'd be so destroyed if they told me. you know, we have a pin in you, you know, it's between you and this. And if I didn't get it, I'd be like, you know, and then I would get really pissed too. I get so pissed.
Haven't watched movies or TV shows that people think are good because I had like just lost out on a small part. Unlike, you know, I'm like, oh, cool, I can't watch Shrill now. Like, I want to watch Shrill, but I'm like, I hate the fact that I didn't book it. And I'm like, why does that bother me? You just reminded me of something. Like, the energy you have when you're young about this, where you're like, this is the end of the world. The redeeming thing, I think, is to know that when you don't get something, once you've been around for 10 years, 20 years, getting no's, your brain starts to go, just because they said no right now, because your fear as a comic, as someone who's like puts their ego out on display, is that you leave the room and everyone goes, I can't believe this guy's still fucking coming in for these things. You know, it's like his agent, like we owe him a favor, the agent a favor, like, you know, whatever. And you're like, all right, let him. Hi, yes. Mm-hmm. Okay, thank you. UTA, right? Cool. Bye. And you're like, they hate.
Right.
Once you get over the fact that you realize that 90% is no's, 95% of a successful successful actor's life is no. And you only need 5% to feel successful. That's what I had to get out, is get over and it is part of the ego. You have to have the ego that believes you're powerful enough to be in these shows, but then that ego also believes that when you leave, everyone talks about you. It's like, but meanwhile, they're just like, next, they don't give a fuck. Eddie, Gabrus, whatever, next, camera, run through. But in your head, you're like, they didn't pick me. I must have been because I did this. Or no, they still hate me from the last audition. And you're like, they don't. They don't even remember me. And I'm all up in my head about why there's this conspiracy behind the scenes where they're like, oh, well, we dropped the ball casting him on this. We'll never let him come back here. And that's almost never the case.
I know.
But you can easily spiral to that shit when you just get one no and you're like, you know, this is the same woman that said no to me previously. I think it's because, and then next thing you know, you've built this whole backstory as to why a stranger hates you.
Oh, totally. Totally.
Before we get out of here, Eddie, I just wanted to talk to you about something that this pursuit of fame. Someone said to me the other day, if not too long, like, this actually conversation comes up a lot. Like, if a genie appeared in front of me right now and said, hey, Gabrus, tell me what you want in Hollywood and I got you. I don't even know what the answer to that question is.
I don't know. I hate those answers, you know, I hate those questions. I mean, because I don't know either, but I think for me it would be something like, you know, I would want to be on like an HBO show where I'm the center, like I'm the main guy on a cable.
That totally makes sense. And that is like, and then that's what someone who is your career coach would be like, cool, have you written yourself a cool HBO show? You'd be like, nope, not yet. But it is what I'd want. Ideally, I want someone who's blessed by HBO already to come to me and go, I want to write a show. Hey, it's me, David Simon. I got a green light at fucking HBO.
Oh, yeah. I've done that thing, too, where I go around pitching shows. Have you done that, like in big studios? That's very nerve-wracking. You want to talk about, like...
Yeah, it almost makes auditioning sound better. Auditions. Yeah, like... makes auditioning feel better than having to go, and this is my idea, this is what I believe, this is my personal story, and they're just like, no. You're like, oh, wow, that's my life I was explaining to you.
Right. Yeah. It's like, and that's where my work ethic comes back to bite me, because you should really be prepared when you go into these studios. But I'm like, I'm an improv, you know, my thing is improvise, you know, I'm very good in the moment.
Same.
And you know, the improviser's curse.
Right. Well, it is our curse. Cause then you're like, I'll bang it out. It'll work. It works on stage. It'll work. And it's like, these people are thinking about making like a $200 million bet on you. And you're like, I'm sort of like off the cuff and shit. And they're like, well, get the fuck out of here.
Yeah. Uphill. It's an uphill.
Yeah, because if I'm like, someone's like, you can have what you can do whatever you want, I'm like, I don't know. Like, I guess I'd like to be in funny movies that my friends are in and like a part, but like, that's, I can aim higher than that. And like, I guess I would like, and then you're like, whose career do I want? I'm like, oh, Seth Rogen seems like peak amazing. And you're like, but Seth Rogen is like an absolute hustler. I don't have that skill set. I just have a beard and smoke weed. I'm not like a writer director. Or maybe I will be eventually. Who knows?
Yeah. Yeah. You know, the really successful people I know are so fucking laser focused. Like, they're ridiculously laser focused that I almost don't like them. You know what I mean?
Yes. Like, well, because they do what we can't. And that's like, have you ever met someone that like works really hard on their podcast and like promoting it and getting guests and shit? And you're like, that's such a fucking waste of time. And then like 7 months later, they're like, yeah, I'm making like 250 grand a year of my podcast. And you're okay, I can't believe I was mocking you. I'm so dumb. Just shooting myself in the feet over and over and over again.
Totally.
And
totally.
It's just funny. Like, Eddie, talking to you, and I just see myself in 20 years guesting on a podcast going, yeah, it's still in the game. And it makes me weirdly, this is reassuring, because you have a fucking, you're 61 years old. You just dropped a fucking awesome special on Amazon Prime. I only happened to watch the first 20 minutes, full disclosure, but I was laughing my fucking ass off. I hate to quote someone's bit out of context, especially when I'm trying to sell the listeners on renting it, but your joke of like, this is the truth, there'll be no dating material, this is raw, this is real, and then you just go, but dating is hard. It was just like that, your tone shift there, fucking, I had like I was welling, I was laughing so fucking hard. You're like, man, dating is hard.
Thank you.
So tell people a little bit about For the Masses, where they can get it and all that shit.
Yeah, it's available on a bunch of platforms, Amazon Prime. It's available on iTunes. Yesterday, I saw it on YouTube rentals, Google Play, you know, a bunch of platforms. But I guess Amazon Prime, iTunes are the big ones. And I'm really proud of it. It's gotten really good reviews. And I did, you know, it's funny, we're talking about not working hard, but the one thing that I do, and it keeps me sane as well, is that I perform, you know, before COVID, of course, I perform so much. Like, I go out and do stand up, I go out and I do it. And it did pay off, you know, it paid off because, you know, all, you know, that's getting the chops, you know.
Well,
and,
real quick, we're talking about work ethic, but we don't believe that we're hard workers. You don't like we're talking, but if you're going out and doing stand up every night for a decade, that's fucking working hard, right? Like that. But we can't. We don't see it as that because we kind of enjoy it and we see friends and we don't make that much money doing it. So you're like, doesn't feel that's, like a job.
Yes.
Like, but there is. You're working fucking hard. You worked on, and that's the thing. I have 250 episodes of this podcast.
True.
Arguably, I'm working on making this.
Right?
I got my 10,000 hours on this. Maybe I am working hard.
Yeah,
and
I know.
It shows. It shows whatever your work ethic might be. But you write material, you perform material, you hone material. You've built a persona and energy that comes out on stage. That's fucking.
Yes.
So we're talking about being lazy, but fucking For the Masses is a product of your hard work. Arguably of. A number of years of hard work.
Well, I said to myself when I got into this business, I said to myself, I'm going to give myself till 80 to make it. Then I'll teach.
I look forward to your 79th birthday when you're just justifying how you've made it.
Can you
imagine?
Like, I know. I know. I know.
Eddie, thank you so much for coming on High and Mighty. This is so fun, man. I appreciate it. What's your social media for people? I'll tag you and everything, but for listeners, if they want to look you up.
Yeah. Well, if they go to eddiepepitone.com, that's the mothership that has all the links to my Facebook fan page, Instagram. Instagram, I'm at Eddie Pep. On Twitter, I'm at Eddie Pepitone. Facebook fan page,
cool.
The same thing.
So listen, shitheads, check that stuff out. Get on Eddie's stuff and rent rent Eddie's special. It's funny as hell. I'm looking forward to.
Yes.
I think I have another podcast at 4, but after that, I'm going to be smoking weed and watching the remaining 40 minutes, and I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, cool. I have another one at 4, too. All right, John.
Hey,
thank you so much.
We work
much,
hard,
man.
Eddie. We're doing back-to-back podcasts. That's hard fucking work. Just don't tell my dad, a 50-year union worker.
I know, right?
I appreciate it, bud.
Yeah.
Bye, shitheads.
That was a HeadGum Podcast.